Okay, so
we're back with part two.
Yeah, if it sounds a little different, it's because we're in a different room because people were using the room we normally use to record, which is very fair because we're not really using it for what it's supposed to be used for.
Trying to figure out how to get it louder. Don't mind me just like shoving my phone in your face.
I feel like I'm at a press conference.
Okay.
Welcome to Sistery. I'm Izzy.
And I'm Inika.
And today we're going to be doing part two of Christina of Sweden. So, yes, Christina killed the cart accidentally. We can forgive
not
her.
Not directly.
I mean, not directly, but about as directly and indirectly as you can get.
Yeah.
But just to touch on like a couple interesting things she did during her reign, like I said, she was a really, really good king. Like, she was very educated. She, it's interesting, her father was really known as the great like Swedish warrior king, and she really didn't do that. She much preferred diplomacy and stuff, and she really, really liked the arts, so she was a huge patron of the arts. She would like commissioned 35 paintings from.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, like I think it was a lot for a ceiling.
For a ceiling?
Yeah.
That's so definitely a lot.
Yeah, so she's like the Pope, you know? Is that for the top of the Sistine Chapel? That's the ceiling, right?
Yeah.
And Michelangelo.
That was a whole thing. You had to lie down painting.
Yeah.
Also, Michelangelo was like the Robert Pattinson of.
I have no idea who that. Robert Pattinson?
Yeah. He did Twilight and he absolutely hated every second of it.
Oh, yeah.
Michelangelo was like that. He was the art version of
that.
We
love him. We relate to that. there was like definitely the 30 Years War during her reign.
There definitely was.
It was a thing that
is
happened.
A fact. That's when the time period was.
Yeah, it was mostly because of like her father. Yeah, but the chancellor who kind of to some extent like raised her and kind of ruled for her while she was.
One of the multiple women who raised her. This is the chancellor who's like her stand-in.
Yeah, I think he was like a pretty paternal figure to her. From what I don't think she ever like lived with him for a prolonged amount of time, but I think he was a pretty like mentor-y figure.
Yeah.
And he actually, they weren't necessarily they weren't necessarily seeing eye to eye on everything, so he was like. Actually, with the 30 Years' War, he actually wanted it to keep going.
Why would you want a war to keep... Literally, every time someone's like, hey, let's keep this war going, that always ends up like one of those things in history class where the history teacher's like, and the war kept going, and it really sucked.
Yeah, I don't really know what was going on. Maybe he thought he would, like, get more power from that. He said it would be in Sweden's best interest if it kept going, maybe because of, like, the religious tensions that came from that, and, like, the benefit of having Sweden as a great Protestant military power in religious conflicts, giving like Protestantism more power. But Christina was essentially like, no, I want peace no matter what. And so he, the chancellor, Oxenstierna, I don't speak Swedish.
I think that's close.
Yeah, he actually like sent his son to like the little peace conference thing to be like, you know, we actually want to keep fighting. But then Christina sent her own person to the same conference.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So it was really, like, an exciting time. And
that's the drama. That's the type of thing that, like, everyone, they go home from that conference and they're like, did you see?
Yeah, that's what happens
on,
like,
what went down?
Yeah, that's what happens on season 3 of the TV show.
Yeah.
But then they signed the Peace of Westphalia. So it worked out.
That's pretty nice.
Christina got what she wanted, probably because she was the absolute monarch.
That would really influence
something
like that.
Yeah, things have a way of working out like that. So she did end up, like, doing a lot of stuff that kind of pissed him off. But, you know, she was, like, a really good queen, a really good monarch, regardless of what some of her fellow, like...
Her colleagues, I guess.
Thought. Yeah.
Her court, her
But then back
peers.
To, yeah, but kind of back to, like, her interest in, like, philosophy and arts and stuff.
There's more?
She invited Hugo Grotius, he's a Dutch jurist. I don't know, apparently he laid the foundations for international law. He doesn't seem that interesting, but, like, he does have his own Wikipedia page, so There's that. But she invited him to, like, be her librarian. But he, like, died on his way there, which is...
God, Christina's got a great record of killing, like, important people.
I'm only mentioning this. Yeah, I'm just mentioning this because I think it's really funny that she killed two people by trying to get them to come stay with her.
Hey, come work for me.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to die or anything. I promise there's not a curse.
You think after... I think it was only two people because after the second time, people were like, hey...
Let's not.
Maybe this is a bad idea. But she was very interested with, like, classics and stuff, which was actually kind of a point of contention between her and Descartes. But
did Descartes not like the Greeks either?
I don't know, but he literally...
What was his deal?
I've read that he did not like that she was interested in ancient Greek, so I think that might be true.
Maybe because the Greeks were all about, like, equality and free thought or whatever.
Maybe, I don't know.
And
but
he was like, absolute monarch, maybe not the best idea to, like, go around advertising. I don't know.
But she actually, like, studied Islam, which is really interesting. Neat. And you can see, like, a lot of...
Oh, yeah, because didn't she speak Arabic?
I think
like
she,
read and write it or whatever.
Yeah, she wasn't fluent in Arabic, but she definitely like knew some of it. And this, again, this is like another mark of the kind of religious toleration that she would be kind of a, she would definitely have throughout her life. And some Jewish man offered to like be her, I'm quoting from her Wikipedia page, become her agent or librarian for Hebrew books and manuscripts. So this is really interesting because again, it, you wouldn't really expect a monarch who's, religion is very, very prominent and important in the politics of the time to be speaking with someone about, like, developing a Hebrew library and stuff like that. So that's just...
Props to her.
Yeah, that's something I thought was really fascinating. And she's really into theater. She's really into, like, ballet and just kind of performance stuff. Things like that.
Nice.
But essentially...
Nice.
Good
arts lady.
Yeah.
Like fun stuff.
Yeah. Now that we've kind of like established how good of a king she was, let's talk a little bit more about her cousin.
Oh my god, I love her cousin.
Yeah.
I told this story the other day.
I feel really bad for that dude.
Me too.
So basically there's her cousin, Charles Gustave. And
we appreciate Charles Gustave.
Yeah, I don't really know, like, what kind of person he was, but I do feel bad for him. Because essentially, like, all of her counselors and stuff were like, hey, you really should marry your cousin, you know, Charles, that bro.
Which at the time wasn't, like, super weird, purifying the bloodline or whatever.
It wasn't.
Or keeping it pure, I guess.
Yeah, it was no big thing.
Not great, just, as history will show. Please.
Yeah.
And in modern times, we know it's not only gross, but not good for any kids. Yeah. You might... Don't go marrying your cousins. This has been a public service announcement.
She was already pretty inbred, though. It was kind of too late.
Anyway.
But essentially, like, she pretty much said, you know what? No, I'm not going to marry him. And they were, like, very, very, like, upset by this, her counselors. And in 1651, age 25, she basically says, you know what, I'm going to abdicate. I don't want to do this anymore. Her reasons that she gave were, she said, the burden of ruling a country is too heavy for a woman to bear. Which I don't know that I believe, actually.
Sounds like from what we've heard from her, that sounds like some...
Yeah, which is interesting because on surface level, that actually might be pretty believable just because of her, like, generalized, you know, women suck, I don't like them, and kind of self-hatred that to some extent came along with that. And so it could make sense that there would be this logic of, you know, a woman shouldn't be running a country. They're too frivolous. They're too dumb. But then
they're
too emotional. But then when you think about her, like, philosophical beliefs surrounding, like, essentially, you know, the difference between men and women is a result of the way their upbringing.
And she had, like, a very masculine upbringing.
She was brought up like a boy. So,
even if she was surrounded by women at all times who were constantly telling
her. Her own philosophy would say, you know, I'm essentially not really a woman in terms of my ability to govern. And then the other thing she said was there's other reasons she didn't want to go into. And we think that these are kind of two-part. So first of all, we think it's just because she did not want to marry.
Yeah.
And so all of her counselors, like, Christina, you gotta marry, you gotta carry on the lineage of your glorious family, your inbreeding. and stuff like this. And so she doesn't really see a way out of that. It's, I think there's like increasingly more pressure on her. She's 25, you know, getting pretty old.
Yeah, you're gonna just like...
Yeah, she's practically ancient, really.
Yeah, it's just gonna like die.
She should be a grandma by now.
Exactly.
And then the other thing we think is she was converting to Catholicism. So at that point, she was not yet a Catholic, but she was really interested in this. And part of it is, you know, Descartes was kind of getting her interested in Catholic philosophy, as was a lot of the other philosophers that she was talking to at the time.
Okay, I've got to say, no shade to Catholicism, but she's out here, like, studying multiple different religions.
Yeah.
And she chooses Catholicism?
Yeah, it's interesting, especially because...
I mean, I'm sure she had a very good reason for it. And again, yeah. Like, there's nothing particularly wrong with Catholicism. Yeah. I don't know.
And also, I just wouldn't think someone in the 1600s would convert from Protestantism to Catholicism.
Yeah, that doesn't, like, line up.
Yeah, really. Like, again, okay. Catholicism, I'm sure, is a lovely
religion.
It kind of feels like taking a step backwards.
And from what I've heard about it, even modern Catholicism sounds a little cultish. Like,
yeah, a little bit.
Well, just a touch.
But kind of in a cool way.
They yeah, got a, they got it's a like a look. Yes. Okay. Continue. On
yeah. Our... Christianity in general is pretty cultish. I go to church. It's just weird.
I don't go to church.
You drink blood. It's a thing. But essentially, she was the queen, or rather the king, of a very Protestant nation, and even though essentially there was an end to religious wars in Europe after the Treaty of Westphalia, there is still, religion is still such a huge thing. It's so important that Sweden is a big Protestant country, that Sweden is a Protestant stronghold, and she can't really, she doesn't really want to have that responsibility of being a good Protestant king of a Protestant nation. And so she decides, you know what, I need to abdicate, I need to convert, I need to not get married, I need to live my life.
I need to do my, I need to go my own way.
Yeah, I need to go my own way as a chaotic neutral entity. And so it's interesting because, like, her advisors were really against this. They were like, no, don't abdicate, you're a really good king, you're
just
great.
Just stay put.
And apparently, I don't know if, I don't think I've read this anywhere else, but
are you on her Wikipedia
page? I am on her Wikipedia page.
Okay, see.
But I actually do think this might be true.
You found the thing about her dad being gay, and that wasn't a thing.
That wasn't so on her Wikipedia page, though. Okay, okay. I disproved that by her Wikipedia page.
No. We're such good researchers.
No, I think this is actually true. I just, most of my research focused on her earlier life, so I don't have any, like, strong sources to back it up, so yeah. Take it with a grain of salt. But apparently that year she decided to abdicate. She lost a lot of her popularity because she beheaded a guy, as well as his 17-year-old son.
Hmm. Was this guy by any chance popular? What was his deal? What was...
His name... He was on... you speak French. Enfant terrible.
Enfant terrible.
Yeah, so I don't know...
He was a person whose unconventional or controversial behavior... or ideas shock, embarrass, or annoy others.
Okay, perfect. Because he definitely was being controversial and trying to shock or annoy her. Because this guy, Arnold Johann Messenius, what a name. He accused
what
her
a name.
Of, quote, serious misbehavior, and I'm putting that in quotes because I don't know what that was, and of being a Jezebel, which is quite the accusation. I love that because... I mean, she kind of was, but essentially, he was...
For the audience.
Yeah.
Describe what a Jezebel is.
So she was basically, well, she wasn't a prostitute, but, like, essentially, that's what it means. Kind of in the Bible, it's, like, different interpretations, but essentially, he called her a whore. Which, like, kind of fair, but also...
That's, like, the equivalent of calling, like, Hillary Clinton ugly. It's like the same vibe of political insult.
Yeah, no, I get it. And so, oh, here's a good quote. Christina was bringing everything to ruin, and she cared for nothing but sport and pleasure, which, like, very relatable, except for the sport bit. But I don't think it was actually true.
I like sport.
Yeah, but she did. She beheaded this guy and his 17-year-old son, and people are kind of, you know, iffy about that, which I think also might have been a reason. She was like, I'm gonna, like... get out of here. I feel kind of uncomfortable because people kind of aren't that into me after I murdered two people.
I gotta say, why the kid?
I don't know. I guess the idea of, like, you punish the whole family so people won't speak out against you.
I guess.
You know, you'd think she'd have learned her lesson, but boy, did she not do that.
She killed more people?
Oh, we'll get into that.
Oh, my God.
But essentially, she, at the same time, she's like, you know what, I'm going to abdicate. And interestingly, her counselors, even after this beheading incident, were very against this. And so, literally, it takes 3 years until she's finally like, nope, I'm serious about this, I'm leaving.
Dude, that seems like a long time. And
no, I know. She's very persistent about this. Mm-hmm. And so in 1651, she crowned her own cousin, Charles Gustav.
Charles Gustav!
King. And so this is such a funny thing to me.
I love this story.
The way I imagine this interaction going down is she essentially kind of, you know, calls him into her sitting room. She's like, Charles, I think it's time for you to be a member of my immediate family.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, finally, we're going to get married. I love you so much. I'm going to be such a good husband to you. I'm going to be such a good king. And she's like,
I'm going to be such
are going to be a good king. You know why? I'm making you my heir, and I'm leaving. And
I love her.
So when she basically officially abdicates and crowns her cousin, it's interesting because even then, even after 3 years of her going, no, I'm leaving, and also after killing two people, literally nobody would take the crown off of her head. Like, nobody was willing to do that because they all were so, like, upset about her leaving. So she literally had to take the crown off of her own head and place it on Charles Gustav's, which I think is such a cool
image.
That's
a very cool image. I'm sure there's, like, some painting of that somewhere.
Maybe. She's such an obscure historical figure. It sucks.
I feel like that'd be a good thing to paint, though. Like,
right?
Especially because she was such a patron of the arts. Like, even if she abdicates.
Maybe.
If I'm an artist in the 1600s in Sweden, I'm painting that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to write, like, a mini series on her whole life.
Oh, good.
Like, she's such a good figure.
We'll post it on our Tumblr and our Twitter.
Yeah,
we'll make us a website.
No, but so she literally takes the crown off of her own head and places it on his, and then immediately after she changes into men's clothes and she rides off for Rome, and she's gonna wear men's clothes for the rest of her life. Which, again, interesting about the unconventional gender aspect.
Also just a hero because at that point, clothes for women were super... I mean, I guess men's clothes were impractical too, but they were slightly less impractical.
Yeah. And so it's really interesting. She kind of is, like, riding through Europe, meeting up with some people. And she, you know, finally meets the Pope, and I don't know if this
You say finally.
I mean, she, like, converts to Catholicism along the way. So she's, like, the Pope's like, oh, yeah, I'm really high-profile convert. This is going to show once and for all Catholicism is way better than Protestantism. I'm going to have a nice senior, like, former queen just living in Rome doing charitable acts.
Very, very, very sweet, very polite. Yeah.
And as I put it in my essay, he quickly grew tired of her heterodoxical antics.
What a word.
Right? So it's really fascinating because I don't know that this is true because it seems to conflict with some things, but I think according to, like, popular legend or whatever, she met the Pope in, like, a red dress. And the reason I'm not sure if this is true is because I've read in other sources she essentially tried to wear men's clothes as often as possible. But I can also see her...
She might have made a special occasion.
Yeah, I can see her changing into a dress.
Yeah, she's meeting the Pope.
But the ironic thing about it is she, you know, changed into a dress to meet him, to be a nice, demure convert, except the dress she wore was red, which is a very...
Coincidentally, funnily enough.
Yeah, it's a very special color, because in Rome, the only people who wear red are prostitutes.
So, isn't that a coincidence?
So,
if that's not a coincidence, that's just really awkward, but...
I'm pretty sure it wasn't a coincidence. I think
she's
like...
too smart for that.
Yeah, I think she's like, you know what, Pope? Okay, all right, I see you.
I see you.
I'll wear a dress. Yeah. I think she really took that comment about being a Jezebel to heart.
Yeah. They want a Jezebel?
Yeah. I'll show them a Jezebel.
I'll show up to meet the Pope.
Yeah, but I think, for me, what I've always been interested in is her time as a king, so I don't have as much, like... fun stuff about her, like, after her abdication. No, I'm just going to go through a quick abridged list of certain shenanigans
she got into. I'm sorry. I've heard most of these stories at this point, so I'm just going to try not to laugh too loudly.
So I think the first thing she did, she goes from Rome to France. She's kind of chilling, and she's, you know, kind of hanging out with the king, and she's like, wow, I miss that. So what happens is essentially Naples, the Neapolitan Republic.
Yep, that's a place.
Yeah, or rather not anymore because the rebellion they fought failed.
But it was a place.
Essentially, there's kind of like an issue with like Naples. They're trying to liberate it from Spain. There's a lot of different stuff going on. So it kind of has uncertain leadership at this time. So what she tries to do is her plan is she's going to take French troops. She's going to take over Naples. And then she's going to be the queen there until she dies. And then she's going to give Naples to France.
That's a very elaborate plan.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's good bargaining.
It's good. No, it's...
It makes sense. She's a good ruler. I'm sure Naples would have been very happy to have her.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I think she convinced the French royalty to give her an army.
I'm imagining her, like, just strolling into, like, I don't know, some French general's office, and there's, like, a big desk, and she just, like, slams her hand down on the desk, and she's like, here's the plan.
Yeah. She's got a whole file folder.
Yeah, and the general's like, who are you? And she's like, it doesn't matter, but here.
Yeah. So essentially she comes up with this plan, and then she like meets the king to tell him about this.
Oh, good.
Like she travels to France. She specifically tell him,
yeah.
Hey,
good. It's commitment. It's good. I appreciate it.
And you're
going
to help me. And so this works out, except there's one little issue.
Oh, is there?
And there's this guy.
There's a guy. There's always a guy.
Gian Rinaldo Montalesi? I'm not sure. It's not French, so I don't know.
No, it's Italian, it's really I'd Italian. Assume.
But essentially, he used to be the leader of the French party in Rome, and she kind of is like, for the past few months, she's been kind of thinking he might be kind of like a spy in her household trying to mess up her plans.
Interesting.
And so what happened is she finds what she decides is proof. And she kills him. So, again, you think she would have learned that not
after the first
killing
two.
People is, like, a good idea.
Good.
She sure just does not think about that.
Of course not. Why would she? She's going to be king or queen of Naples.
Yeah. But then the thing is, Naples does not work out.
Interesting.
Oh, I would like to point out... he, like, goes to her, and he's like, please give me mercy, I'm sorry, whatever. And she gets her domestics, so her servants, to stab him in the stomach and the neck.
Oh, my God.
And he's wearing, like, chainmail, and she has him chased around the room until they finally kill him.
That's so bad.
It's horrifying.
That's so
but it's
bad.
Really funny. Like you can just imagine.
I mean, I can imagine it, but this isn't like a Tom and Jerry thing.
It's
where like you know it's gonna be okay. This guy's dead. These servants are probably traumatized. How do you even like? Do you give someone a raise after they?
I don't know.
Do you like hire? They had. It's not like a hired killing, but they got paid for it. I'm sure.
Yeah, probably. And then. Literally, what happened is, like, this guy that he was with, she was like, all right.
You know. Oh, we brought a friend.
Yeah, he brought a friend, and the friend tried to, like, beg for mercy with him. I don't think the friend got stabbed, so that's good. But but Christina's essentially like, all right, bury him in the church. And then she pays an abbey to say, like, masses for him, for his soul, after having him brutally murdered.
That's kind of merciful.
And then she says that she was, quote, sorry that she had been forced to undertake this execution, but claimed that justice had been carried out for his crime and betrayal. So, I mean, it's horrible.
It is horrible.
She's chased around like Tom and Jerry to be killed, but it's just, it's kind of funny. Just, she shows no understanding of why this was maybe a problematic thing to do. And she's like, fine, you know. She got her rights to the French king. He, like, shows up and is, like, friendly with her. He doesn't see a problem with that either. Everybody's kind
of
chill.
What is going on in Europe at this point? And yeah. I mean, a lot of our ladies have been from European history around mm-hmm. this time. And we are going to branch out, I promise. I just would like to say that. But, like, we still don't know what's going on in Europe.
Yeah. They're just very rich people.
It's very rich people going around killing people.
Yeah. If it helps, in Rome, people are not into this.
Oh, good.
The guy she murdered is an Italian nobleman.
Yes.
So people are like, I don't.
He was rich. Yeah. And I might not have loved him when he was alive, but now that he's dead, that was kind of shady.
People don't like this. Apparently, like, the proof that she had that he had betrayed him, she, like, gave them to the friend that had come with him, so they don't have proof anymore.
So there's no proof of why she just murdered this guy.
Yeah, and apparently it might be because they were, like, having an affair, and the papers were, like, evidence of that. So, you know, it was kind of an issue. So that was the first time she tried to take over a country.
The first time. There are more times, of course.
So then later on...
I'm sorry. My phone turned off, and then the reflection is just... You can just see their faces. It's a little... Sorry.
Yeah, no, so...
Sorry, Liz.
She returns to Rome, and people are, like, not into her anymore. She's not popular anymore. The Pope calls her a woman born of a barbarian, barbarously brought up and living with barbarous thoughts, with a ferocious and almost intolerable pride, which, like... mean, but I can't disagree.
Yeah, I was trying to think of something witty to say to that, but no, that's just, I mean, I guess I'm sure the Pope could think of other adjectives other than variations of the word barbaric, like, six times, but, like, I can kind of imagine him just, like, yelling it.
Barbarian!
And just, like, struggling to think of other words, so he's just kind of, like, spluttering.
Yeah. But then... 3 years later, in 1660, she finds out that her cousin, you know, Charles Gustav, he has died.
Oh no, Charles!
And his son is actually only 5 years old.
Oh no, Charles Jr.
Charles!
Small Charles!
Yeah, his name actually was Charles.
Okay, good.
You're right. And so this is 9 years later.
Yeah.
So, you know, he moved on. Charles
he did. Good. We're happy for him. We love a good redemption arc here.
At this point, she's 34. She's still young, strapping, ready to take over her country.
Can't have kids, though.
Yeah. So she goes to Sweden. Hey, guess here's what's up. I left the throne to Charles Gustav. And so he's dead now. So he doesn't have the throne anymore. So technically, I should have the throne. And honestly, I think she might have been able to do it, except for the fact that she was Catholic.
Interesting.
Like, it seems like they were like, you know, no, I'm on board.
And that's solid logic. Good.
You did,
in fact, have the throne at one point.
And you did technically abdicate for him, and he's not around anymore.
Yeah, his kid is, but the kid is five. Yeah. He can't even dressed in the morning.
Yeah. But the issue is, essentially, they're like, nope, you're Catholic, we're a Protestant country, we'd rather have a five-year-old. Thank you very much for your contribution.
What a roast.
I know.
What a roast.
And then, 8 years later.
8 years later, so the kid is now 13?
Yeah, he's some age. He might 13. Be dead, who knows?
I mean,
kids died a lot back then.
Let's assume he's alive in 13. Just have a little part of Charles Gustav live on.
Yeah, doesn't really matter, though, because this isn't about him.
No.
So, 1668, the ruler of the Polish-Lithuanian throne abdicates and goes back to France.
Huh.
And, essentially, the thing is, the Polish monarchy is elective. So, you are elected by a board of, like, nobles and stuff, I think.
So, biased election, but it's a lot... more democratic than the pretty standard, hey, your dad, he wore a crown.
Yeah, it's not a true democracy, but it is, like, the people vote on them.
It's kind of a representative democracy.
Yeah, it's like an elite democracy.
Yeah.
Well,
it's not quite an oligarchy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because then they elect them.
Yeah.
It's something.
Yeah, it's some kind of government. Ironically, we're in my government room right now. But Christina shows up to Poland. And she's like, hey, what's up? You need a king. I was a king for a long time. They really liked me. I wasn't really a king for a long time. I was a king for 7 years when I was an adult. But I was a king for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was really good at it. And essentially, the reason she kind of listed why she should be queen, she essentially said, hey, I'm Catholic. I'm an old maid, so I'm not married.
Yeah.
And I'm not planning on getting married.
Solid. So she's basically just an old guy.
Yeah.
That they were like,
literally like, I'm Catholic and I am not attached to a man. What more do you need?
Yeah.
And
I like the arts.
Yeah.
I'll get a bunch of paintings for you.
Actually, she did have the Pope's backing, which is really
interesting. How did she get the Pope's back?
I have no idea. She had a really, I think this was over the
course
of...
We go into the Pope's backstory in season 4 of your wacky sitcom featuring Christina.
I think this was over the course of several papacies.
But
I can't imagine she had a really good relationship with any of them.
Yeah.
It seems very odd that she would actually like them.
Seems unlikely, but,
But she was actually beaten. She was beaten by a native Pole. The people there were essentially like, no, you know what? We don't want you. Thank you very much for your application.
We would be honored to have you as our queen or king or whichever variation of ruler you'd prefer, but,
No thanks. Thank you, but no thanks, essentially. But she's actually pretty okay with this. She's tired.
She takes it well.
She's old. So she goes back to Rome, and she actually lives out the rest of her life pretty quietly and pretty happily. She dies 22 years later.
That's a good life for the
1600s. Yeah, in 1689, so she was super old.
She's in her 50s or something?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out. I'm trying to do some
Some detective work.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, it was 1626 to 1689. So she was 63. 60s.
Nice.
Yeah, she did pretty well for herself.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, she lived a long time.
Yeah.
And she, had
sirens.
But yeah, she had a pretty peaceful end of her life. There was some fun stuff. So she, I think my favorite is she put every single Jew in Rome under her protection.
That's good. Yeah, I like that.
And I think my favorite thing is she did this under her authority as, quote, the queen. Of what? She never specified. Just in general.
She was using, slang before it was even... She invented... Yeah.
Just, once a queen, always a queen.
Yeah.
And she was one of six women buried in St. Peter's Basilica.
That's nice. That's really a interesting. Good achievement.
Yeah, I had to do a little section on her impact. She didn't have a lot of impacts.
Yeah, she just lived... She was like YOLO, but...
Yeah.
She's just a personification of 16th century YOLO.
God, that's a horrible statement.
It is a horrible statement. Let's take that out.
Yeah, but she did. She helped out her country a lot. She gave Sweden its first newspaper, first countrywide school ordinance. Literature and science are encouraged.
What are you talking about? She has no impacts. Those are all great impacts.
No, I mean, just no big ones. She helped her country a lot. She did a lot of really good things. She was a huge patron of the arts. She founded the Arcadia Academy for Literature and Philosophy, which still exists today.
Yeah, I was that's a thing.
That's really cool. And she apparently initiated the building of the first public Roman opera house, which is cool.
That's neat.
It's that's a very specific thing. Yeah. Not just the first public one, not the first Roman one, not the first opera house, but
first Roman public opera house. Yeah, but that's a cool thing.
She sponsored a bunch of artists and musicians and stuff.
Yeah.
And she had a huge collection of art, which kind of then would get split up and has been parts of a lot of different collections. She had a huge collection of writings that went to the Vatican Library. And so, again, she was really supportive of religious toleration. She wrote about, tolerance of French Huguenots and Roman Jews. And she was really passionate about stopping church-sanctioned violence against Jewish people.
I'm impressed. These are all great things. Good for her.
She was kind of a problematic fave. She didn't kill several people.
I mean, a lot of rulers killed several people. The Huguenots, she had to protect them because they were literally being slaughtered and persecuted. So I feel like grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and she has inspired two movies. So
two movies?
I think it was maybe King or Queen Christina or something. It has Greta Garbo in it. It's amazing because it was very much supposed to be straight, and then Greta Garbo was ooh, maybe let's not do
let's
that.
Let's think about this.
There's an amazing part where she just kind of makes out with Ebba Sparre for a little bit, but it's in the script a friendly kiss.
Not then, that you've, like, researched this deeply or anything.
And then there's The Girl King, which is on Netflix. It's really good. It's really, like, there's... I really love the cinematography. It's really fantastic. It's very much, like, openly not straight, which is really cool because that's not something that you necessarily see a lot in works of historical fiction. And there's a lot of, like, books about her. Not a lot, actually. I had to do a lot of research on her, and I can tell you there's not a lot of stuff
on her. I remember you complaining about no resources on her for, like, months on end.
Yeah, it was really frustrating because she wrote so much, but I couldn't really access, like, any of it because...
It's all in the Vatican Library.
Yeah, it's all in the Vatican Library, and there are no online copies of it that I can find.
Of course not. Do you think Pope Francis is out here, like...
And I couldn't find any, like, good translations of them either, because it may be a shock, but I don't speak French or Latin or any of the other languages she's spoken.
Just run them through Google Translate.
Yeah, but she was a really fascinating woman. She was really talented, and she's... such a complex, multifaceted figure who was, I think, really born before her time.
Good. And I think she's our first two-part episode, because this is almost 40 minutes.
Oh, jeez, it really is.
Congratulations. This is the beginning of an era.
Yeah. All of my episodes are really long.
I know, and then all of mine are, like, 15 minutes.
It's a good little, it's good breaks. Yeah. You know?
I don't know. I think they normally end up, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah, but no, it's good. But thanks for listening. This has been Sistery.
I'm Inika.
And I'm Izzy. You can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Sistery Podcast. That's SISTORY. I had a little lapse in mental ability there.
That's why I picked up on you. We're good. We're friends like that.
Thank you so much for listening. Oh, listen, I'm pulling up her whole Wikipedia page right now. You know, this is a quality podcast, and we would never deprive you of such fascinating input.
Mm-hmm.
No, free use. Don't asthma girl. You have to play sports. No. You don't have a choice.
I mean, I do, but.